Thank you, Madam Chair. All right, just to kind of give you the 30,000-foot view with this, what this bill does, and I'll go through a few of the provisions in detail, and perhaps Mr. Kite will add some information himself, is the bill makes some modest changes to tenure, both as it pertains to classroom teachers and principals/vice principals. It also provides school districts a bit more flexibility to select and retain and assign highly qualified teachers. It gives an opportunity to go outside the usual priority of dismissal, so that specific teaching positions, we can make sure that we have the right people in those positions. The timelines for probationary periods are going to change to give districts just a little bit more of an opportunity to do a thorough evaluation of giving tenure to new teachers who come into the district. We're hoping that the assistant principal and principal probationary period changes will give districts some help in recruiting within the teacher ranks for those positions. And then finally, if we are changing the definition of demotion to pertain specifically to income rather than the specific position title that an individual has. So with that, members and Madam Chair, let me start here in subdivision 5 of the A1 amendment. And do we now have a quorum? Do we get enough?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so with that, Madam Chair, I would renew my motion to accept the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is prevailed and it is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. All right. If you go look at the A1 amendment, you will see under subdivision 5 there that current law provides that if a
tenured teacher changes districts, that individual then has a one-year period of probation before the tenure decision is made. This bill would change that to 3 years, so that a district bringing on a new teacher would have a three-year period to evaluate those teachers. There's also a change in law such that you would have to teach 120 days out of any school year to be deemed a year of teaching during a probationary period. Then if you flip over to page 2, and again, I'm hitting the highlights, and certainly we'll be happy to take questions, you'll see starting there on line 2.9, the probationary period for principals would provide a two-year probationary period required for any licensed teacher who becomes employed as a principal or assistant principal. But also note that same subdivision, 8A, allows that individual remains tenured as a teacher should that person be put back into the classroom. The teacher tenure remains. Next, let's go down, Madam Chair, to line 223 under subdivision 11. In the event of an unrequested leave of absence, what this does, it allows the board to not follow the usual rules of allowing teachers to go for those teachers who teach in a Montessori or language immersion program, provide instruction in an advanced placement course, or holds a K-12 instrumental vocal classroom license. On it goes. You'll notice that within the Montessori program, though, or within the language immersion program, a teacher would be placed on unrequested leave consistent with the usual rules of dismissal. Now, the purpose of this, Madam Chair and members, is, and I believe Mr. Kite could probably do a better job of explaining this, and I'll let him give the details, but you run into odd situations where perhaps a choir director, band director is uniquely suited to direct or lead a specific group in a high school. Because of the current rules, that individual may be bumped and a less qualified individual put into that position. And this is to prevent that. And as I say, I will let Mr. Kite or anyone else who would like to talk about this give a little bit more detail. But that is the gist of it, is to give the administration the opportunity to keep the best qualified people in those positions. Next, I want to talk just a little bit about clarifying the definition of demotion. And now I am looking at line 5.1, which is on the top of page 5, obviously, of the A1 amendment. And the word demote in the past has meant potentially a reduction in rank or transfer to a lower branch of service. Now, to be demoted, you'd only be considered to be demoted if your compensation changed. So now, say, for example, a school were to close and a principal were to have to move to a different position within the district, even if the classification of that position were not as high ranking as a principal, if the compensation package remained the same, that would not be deemed a demotion. And then there are some other details as far as review of probationary teachers for tenure and those kinds of things. And I believe that would be kind of a pretty fair summary of the most important operative positions of the legislation. And, of course, I would be happy to stand for questions, and Mr. Kite is here to help out as well.
Okay, thank you, Senator Thompson. Are there any questions of the author, or shall we proceed with the testimony from Mr. Kite? Go ahead.
Senator Olson, members of the committee, I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I actually think Senator Thompson covered this really well. One thing I would mention is that sometimes when we look at these bills, they seem a little confusing because they tend to seem like they repeat themselves. That's because there are two sets of laws in Minnesota that are mostly parallel. One is called the continuing contract law for all the schools in Minnesota, except the cities of the first class. Then there's a separate set of statutes called the tenure law, which covers Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, cities of the first class. They're mostly the same, not perfectly the same, but mostly the same. And so when you try to make some changes like this, you kind of have to state them two ways, under one section of the law and then under the other section of the law. And because the laws aren't written exactly similar, sometimes the language looks a little bit different, but the intent in each law is exactly the same that we're bringing forward to you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bono.
A question, Mr. Kite, with regard to that. I was wondering as I was reading this if we had captured all of those nuances, and I noticed that in each place where it's been written, we refer to it as continuing contract. So does that, in fact, cover the cities of the first class, given they don't refer to it that way?
Senator Bonhoff, Senator Olson, Senator Bonhoff, members of the committee, it does because this language repeats itself. It first walks through continuing first class, and then in the latter part of it, first goes through the continuing contract schools, then it goes through the city's first class schools. So if you're reading it, you think, gee, I'm reading that same language two times. It's
gotcha.
Only because it's referring to two different sections of the law.
Thank you.
And Mr. Kite, I was, Senator Thompson, your description of demotion triggers the memory of a recent case I don't know if that's still in progress, that someone was transferred to an assistant or associate rather than a full position and challenged that as being a demotion. I don't know what the compensation was. Is there, how does this language affect that, or is it meant to clarify or that particular provision or that kind of situation? Ms. Gilbert, you want
to? Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools. This section is intended to clarify that. The appeals court was sympathetic to the argument that was provided by the school district and by MSBA relating to have the authority to assign staff at schools. And so this did say that unfortunately there was some, that the legislature should act to clarify the section, and that's what this proposes to do. In the appeals court case, we did not change the salary. The issue was whether or not it was considered a demotion because she wasn't assigned to be the principal of a school.
And Ms. Gilbert, what position was she assigned to?
She was a high school. She had come from a high school position, and she was assigned to work at another high school on curriculum.
Okay, so it was a different position assignment, but no, there was no change in compensation.
Correct.
And you're clarifying that if the compensation isn't reduced, then it isn't a demotion.
Correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? If not, are there any other, is there any other testimony? Oh, Senator Wigger?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I had a further question on demotion. If a person has a net reduction in their compensation, that might not necessarily relate to performance. It could be because, you know, compensation is more than your pay, it's also your benefits, correct? And I'm just looking at other ways of looking at how the definition of demotion and what your actual compensation package is, and whether it's two different things we're looking at for purposes of discharge or something else.
Madam Chair and Senator Wigger, I believe that the clarification is necessary for when there is an issue around whether or not the person has been moved and there was an agreement or not related to the disposition of the staff person. So a general change in the contract or anything that applies to everybody is not an issue.
Mr. Aronson?
Madam Chair, members, Roger Aronson, I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association, and we just want to go on record that we support this bill. We think this is an excellent bill, and there are some changes in the provisions here that school principals generally think are very good ideas, and in particular those that relate to the probationary periods, et cetera. And so we're happy to come forward today and say that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any questions? Members, what's your pleasure, Senator Thompson? Would you? I'm sorry.
I would like to see John Elswagger join me. That's.
Madam Chair,
there she is.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Elswagger, Education, Minnesota. It has gotten to the point now, instead of signing in on the sheet with all of these wonderful bills, I now have stickers. And so I just place them on the sign-in sheet after I'm done speaking.
Welcome to Salt River.
You pass your sticker to me if you'd like.
No, thank you. Education Minnesota does oppose this bill, and I think that there are some consequences that you should think about. And so I'm going to pose some situations to you. This bill certainly does affect all teachers, whether they're first class or cities of the first class or other teachers. And on line 1.8 of the A1 amendment, you are changing it from 1 year to 3 years if you teach in another district. So it takes you 3 years, which we think is quite a long time, to achieve continuing contract status. I don't know of any other profession that would take 3 years of probationary period. This now says that if you go... Current law is you go one more year in another district, and then you can have continued contract status. So this change is it to 3 more years. I think we understand that. But let's just say that an individual goes through the 3 years in Lakeville and then decides to teach in Apple Valley, and instead of going 1 year to reach continuing contract status, they would have to go 3 years. So now let's say that in the third year, and let's just say it's me, I am pregnant. I am told I have to go on 10 weeks of bed rest. And then I decide that I want to be a good mother. I want to stay home with my child for 2 months. I now will not meet the requirement in the time period. You're getting rid of the language 1.13 to 1.15. And then also on page 2.1, you're saying that they must complete 120 days of teaching service. So on my sixth year of teaching, because I'm put on bed rest and decide to take a child care leave, or it could be that one of my family members is sick and I take a longer leave or a medical leave, whatever the reason being, that now it would actually... I'd have to start all over again. This could be at the end of the third year in one district. It could be at the end of the sixth year in a second district. if you you wouldn't make probation, you wouldn't make the continuing contract status. So it could be that it would take, if even if it was on your third year that this happened, you'd have to start another 3 years. And so even if you were in the same district, it could take you 6 years to reach probationary status. And I would point you to lines 1.32. This is current law. Education Minnesota supported this language, so for military service, but it does seem interesting, and that's all I will say, that you could be on military leave for 2 years, and that would not hurt your probation, your consecutive service. But yet, if I were having a child and missed 3 months of school, I would have to start all over. And so I ask you to seriously think about that. And let's move on to line 2.27, where we talk about the unrequested leave of absence. We wonder why we would just pick these few areas and give them special rights compared to everybody else. You might have an excellent first grade teacher who's also licensed to teach Montessori, who's a more veteran teacher, and you have a Montessori teacher who's only been there a couple of years or 4 years, whatever, less senior, and that more veteran teacher who is a first grade teacher and is doing a fine job wouldn't be able to possibly take that position if the first grade position was cut. So I think that there are some questions about this. All of this could be collectively bargained. Some school districts already have separate seniority situations, bumping rights. You will find some districts which will have early childhood, cannot move from to, even if they're licensed in the regular teaching unit, they can't bump from the teaching unit, the regular K through 6, let's say, unit to the early childhood. That can already be bargained. So making it state law is really telling districts how they have to operate, and they might have a better way of operating. We do think that it makes sense for the principal language, because if you are a good teacher and you are going into the principalship, we think it makes sense to have, rather than 1 year, 2 years. But then why? Because there are different positions. Just because you're a good teacher does not mean that you'll be a good principal. However, then why would we say a teacher who's already proven themselves as being a good teacher and moves to another district would have to serve three years to become a continuing contract teacher? It just doesn't really make sense. A teacher becomes a principal in 2 years under continuing contract, but a teacher would take another 3 years when they've already been doing teaching. So we think what would really make more sense is to have the cities of the first class and the other school districts, all of them, having only 1 year to become a continuing contract status or tenure status after they've already received that label in another district. What would that do? That would make it easier for districts such as Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth to recruit really good teachers to come into their school districts and serve some very needy kids, and vice versa, and only have to serve 1 year continuing contract. What incentive right now is there for a teacher who is thought of very highly in Lakeville to move to Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Duluth? Because they have to serve 3 years now. We think it makes more sense to make them all 1 year. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Kite.
Senator Olson, members of the committee, we respectfully disagree with the the points of the last testifier. I'll just go through them in order. There was a reference to what about the person who has a medical leave during that second set of probationary time. They, on a medical leave, they're still an employee of the school district. Their employment is not broken. If they don't have enough time in a given year, you would roll that third or last probationary year over to the next year. So it would take a little more time, but it does not force you to start all over again. Secondly,
Mr. Kite, to that point, is there was exemptions made, it was pointed out, exemption made relative to military service. Would a child care leave be an amendment that acknowledged that? Consistent with that, would that be out of order, or what would be a problem with that?
Senator Olson, members of the committee, I'm not sure of the answer to that. The reason the military piece is in here is there's specific federal law that reflects how the relationship works between employers when somebody goes on to military duty. So that's what we try to reflect in here. We actually would not want a situation where we have somebody who is on long-term medical leave so that ultimately the district doesn't really know the performance level of that person. I'm sympathetic to the argument, but at the same time, while Ms. Allschwager wants to protect the individual as the teacher, we have some obligation to also protect the institution as the school to make sure that we have the best people possible in our school and that we take the time to be sure of doing that. If I could move to the part about the seniority piece, three quick comments on this. First of all, the language says the board may exempt people. It doesn't require boards to do this. They could do it if they have a situation where they felt it necessary, but many boards may not. Secondly, in terms of the Montessori question of there could be two people both trained in Montessori, lines 2.32 and lines 2.33 specifically kind of cover that case. So if you've got somebody who's trained and they have more seniority, they have the job. And then the third thing is that the comment was made that, you could bargain this. Well, you could, but you'll have a checkerboard all over the state. Some districts doing it one way, some doing it another way. If you do this statutorily, you can get some regularity across the state, and I think that's very important. So those are some comments that we would just make in rebuttal.
Mr. Kite and Senator Thompson, I was reading that provision in Section 3 and was slightly confused. Now, you pointed out that the board may exempt them from the effects of paragraphs B to G, but then you do get down to that Montessori or language immersion must be placed on unrequested leave consistent with paragraph C. So that's operative within that program, but then the next sentence says the board is governed by provisions of paragraph B to G consistent with this paragraph. What paragraph are you talking? B through G is part of the whole paragraph of subdivision 11. Oh, no, that's, or is it the A paragraph that you're referring to? That the board is governed by provisions of paragraph B to G consistent with what, paragraph A? Is that what that means? Or is it, what does it mean?
Senator Olson, members of the committee, I will attempt to clarify this. The reference to paragraph C is paragraph C on lines 3.8 to 3.12, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that basically says, last hired is first let go. That's the seniority piece. And then D, E, and D, E, and F, and G below specifically kind of spell out how that mechanism works in certain cases. And if I'm incorrect on that, I'd be glad to have somebody clarify.
Well, Mr. Kite, it says that they're governed by provisions of B to G, but then consistent with this paragraph. What paragraph are you talking about?
Senator Olson, the new C.
Yeah.
We have a person wiser than I here that can, I think, clarify this.
Madam Chair and members, the question that you're asking, Mr. Kite, goes to what's pretty much the heart of the unrequested leave provisions that are in the city's not of the first class statute, and that is it's now becomes paragraph C in this amendment on 3.8. And that's a, you know, and as you can see there, it establishes two criteria when districts lay people off. They lay them off in the inverse order in which they were employed in the district, in fields in which they are licensed. And the attempt in the language that you're asking about is to say when we're laying people off that are in a Montessori program, that we would lay those folks off in the inverse order in which they were employed in the district. That's what the attempt is to do here. And it gets kind of complex because we're creating classes within classes here. The attempt in the amendment was to say, if I have an elementary teaching license and I'm not in a Montessori program and I'm senior to someone who's in a Montessori program and the superintendent decides we want to keep those Montessori people, we don't want folks who don't have the Montessori training, bump them out, the superintendent can make that decision. And the problem that we have here is licensure hasn't kept up with our modern assignments because we don't per se have a Montessori license or a language immersion license. So, but if we're going to lay the Montessori people off inside their own group, we're going to lay them off in the traditional order.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Okay. That part I understood.
Oh, sorry.
It's the sentence that follows it that I don't understand.
You called me up here, Madam Chair.
On line 3.1, 3.2. So having said that, that they within that program, they have to follow point C. Then it continues, the board is governed by the provisions of paragraphs B to G, consistent with this paragraph.
And I think
what is that referring to?
Madam Chair,
feeling if I'm confused, somebody else might be too.
This, Madam Chair, you're absolutely correct on that. This is confusing stuff even without trying to change it. But this statute creates several other categories. People who, in terms of layoff, people who are probationary, people who are working under variances, people who have provisional licenses, and I think the attempt on that language in 3.1 and 3.2 is to say those provisions as well get picked up in the layoff of those individuals that are in the Montessori program together if we're laying them off. It might be a bit clumsy, but that's what we're trying to do here.
So the reference to this paragraph is referencing paragraph C. In the second and 3.2, consistent with paragraph C. Rather than saying this paragraph, would that be more clear?
No. Madam Chair, I don't know why it wouldn't say consistent with paragraphs B through I think if it is simply redundant, and that's the question you're asking, that might be. I don't think there's any intent to do something other than that here. And I was part of the group that was visiting with putting this together, and we weren't attempting to do something other than that. So if that's something you want us to try to fix.
Well, I think there should, if it's referring to the Montessori and language immersion that have to come under paragraph C, then if that other stuff follows, then make it clear that it's following that provision, not the earlier provisions of the amended language.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, typically as a matter of statutory construction, Mr. Aronson, you can weigh in on this too. Using the term this paragraph would be a reference to the literal paragraph that language is contained in. And so I think if I understand this correctly, and counsel, you can weigh in here if I'm out to lunch, but my assumption would be what that means is these exceptions to the usual last in, first out, provisions that are in here for Montessori, et cetera, that those can be applied, the board can choose whether or not to exempt the Montessori program, the various other exceptions that are in here. If they choose not to do that, then they would let people go in accordance with the usual continuing contract provisions consistent with the paragraph that is written here. So I
paragraph 8, which was where I started.
Actually, it would be, I would read that, Madam Chair, as paragraph, the paragraph that constitutes subdivision 11. It's a reference to that entire paragraph. And counsel, if I'm wrong, please correct me. But I think all it's saying, right?
Madam Chair, members, the consistent with this paragraph, I think, is paragraph A, that they have to follow B through G consistent with the exemptions they could make under paragraph A.
Then I think we need to say that.
Consistent, okay. If that's the intent, yeah, I think that should probably be clarified. I would agree.
If that's paragraph, or if when you put an A, if there's another terminology for it, whatever it is,
right.
I think that would just make that clear.
And if I may, Madam Chair, I wanted to add something a little bit unrelated based on a comment Ms. Alswager made to me privately, is she has some reason to believe that jumping back to this issue of 3 consecutive years to obtain tenure if you change districts, that, in fact, there's case law out there that says if you miss a year, you do have to start the 3 over. And I want to be fair on that, that if that's the case, that was not my intent with this legislation, and I would certainly be open to an amendment to clarify that if a teacher misses a year, to use your example, for a pregnancy or a maternity leave or whatever the case may be, not related to performance or anything like that, that that would not start the 3 years over again. I think, Mr. Kite, that's our intent, is it not? So I'm open to that.
Okay, while they're working on that, consider this proposal. That last sentence, it seems to me it would make sense to insert it before the however in 2.32, that for all of the, for the things that you've done up to that point, they are governed by the provisions of paragraph B through G. However, within the Montessori and that, then it goes to C. Read that and see if that makes any sense or makes it easier to, flows easier. Or I'll straighten me out.
Senator Olson and members of the committee, I think it does make it clear, but, you know, I think it would be wise here to defer to your counsel to, I think she understands what the intent here is, and if there's a I think it's a very simple set of clarification that can happen here.
Well, Mr. Kite, I think you're right, we
should get it right.
I was hoping if we could get this amended, you know, we've dealt with a number of bills, and there are some things that need to be fixed. And we haven't had the luxury of all the time to micromanage and do that right here. Mm-hmm. So we keep laying things over, but we're running out of time. And you may want to have this bill go on.
Well, and
so,
it is
and
my.
I think we have an obligation to fix it here.
Yeah,
and
Madam Chair, I would
appreciate raising a couple of issues, and if there's others that want to raise that, maybe somebody can quickly draft something that fits that scheme. We can get it done and take action and move on to the next bill.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, it was my intent to try to move this to the floor, so I would appreciate the opportunity to get it fixed. Yes.
Okay. Are there any questions or discussions, Senator Daley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question, I'm not sure who it's directed toward exactly, but as I think about this, why do we need to create these different categories if the current system is effective? The current tenure system, layoff system, is effective. Why do we need to create these different categories?
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and Senator Daley, I think the reason that we want to make these changes, and I would certainly let Mr. Kite or Mr. Aronson speak to this, is that we feel that the current system isn't as effective as it could be. That if we allow school districts 3 years when a teacher transfers in as opposed to 1 to make these evaluations, it would allow the school districts to make better judgments. We believe that it's helpful to school districts to be able to move principals around if there's contractions and they close a school. without having the problems that come from a demotion if, in fact, the individual is getting paid the same amount of money. So I think some of these things are improvements.
If I,
Mr. Kite,
Senator Olson, Senator Daley, and members of the committee, if you're referring to kind of why should there be this set of provisions around the seniority or the layoff piece, I'll just give you one kind of quick example. You can go into a school system and have five secondary math teachers, one of which they all have the same licenses, but one has both the skill and the training to be the advanced placement calculus teacher. Now that district unfortunately has to move from five to four teachers. And if that advanced placement teacher under the present law is the bottom person, that person gets placed on unrequested leave, and the school district then loses the person who has the specific skill to teach that course. Under these provisions, that if that situation occurred through board action, the board could say, no, we want to keep this person because they have a unique skill, and there's nobody else there that can do it. Now they would go to the next person if they had to do that layoff. These situations come up every so often, and they're coming up more now when we're in the process of, frankly, having to downsize our staffs. And we need to have the ability to keep the people on our staffs that have these unique skills.
Senator Bono.
Madam Chair, and follow up with what Senator Daley's question was. Senator Thompson, I can appreciate adding the things for principals and administrators. I think that's a good addition. I think this addition that Mr. Kite just referred to is a good addition. What is the thinking behind the change that says if you move to a district, you need three more years? I can see in a way why maybe 1 year isn't enough to really get to know somebody, but what made you think you should go through a complete new cycle?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I will let Mr. Kite respond to that because I'm not in the business of evaluating teachers.
Senator Olson, Senator Bonoff, members of the committee, that's the language that now is present in the cities of first class. Works for them. And we have felt for many, many years that in the rest of the school districts, trying to make these decisions in just 1 year is just too quick. And so what we're trying to do is to bring us into conformity with the cities of the first class so we're consistent throughout the state. And we think that's an appropriate period of time.
Okay. At the risk of confession, having taught, it's probably getting close to 100 years ago now, but I did, the tenure system was in place, but I taught in one school for 3 years and then went to another school. My assignment was within my field, but was substantially different. And I did teach there for 3.5 years. I don't ever recall even thinking about the concept of tenure. I mean, you're busy working and doing the best job you can, and that's, to me, it's kind of an irrelevant thing. As teachers, that ought not to be the prevailing thought in our mind, but unfortunately, that seems to become a focal point. But on the other hand, when you are taking on new subject areas and new challenges, and I had that continuously adding to that during that time, I understand the appropriateness of having some extended time to that in a new situation, because they aren't necessarily identical.
Madam Chair, I believe, if it be your pleasure,
Senator
Mr. Aronson has some help on these other two issues that we were dealing with.
Mr. Aronson.
Madam Chair, I spoke with counsel about this, and we think that if on 3.1 you say paragraph B through G at the front end, that the second sentence, the board governed by the following provisions, is redundant. So we think we can say then that sentence begins back on 232. However, within Montessori, where language immersion, the teacher must be placed on unrequested leave of absence consistent with paragraphs B through G.
and then take that next sentence out.
And take the next sentence out.
Council?
Someone like to move that? Or you, would you like to move it to Senator Thompson?
Yes, and maybe someone should summarize, but my understanding, Madam Chair and members, would be that we would take in line 3.1, after the word paragraph, we would insert B, like boy, through G, period, delete the remainder of sentence 3.1, and delete all of 3.2. Is that correct, Council? Mm-hmm. And I would move that, yes.
Well, and Madam Chair, you have to take out paragraph and say paragraphs. So on 3.1, delete paragraph C and insert paragraphs B through G.
Mm-hmm. And then delete the rest. Okay. Any discussion on that amendment? Not all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Senator Reed?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question, Senator Thompson. In addition to the focus on teachers with principals, and in light, too, of discussion in Lakeville and the superintendent and, you know, evaluation and contracts, has that subject come to mind as a way to be more inclusive in how we do evaluations?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Wieger, I'll again let Mr. Kite answer, but my understanding is that superintendents are not given continuation kinds of contracts. They're assigned up for a written contract, specified period of time. When that contract runs out, they either do or they don't get a new deal. So it's a completely different model of hiring and retaining. But Mr. Kite?
Senator Olson, members of the committee, we would love to have the superintendents under the same law as the teachers and principals are, but I don't think you all are willing or wanting to do that. The superintendents serve at will, and the only thing that they have that is a little bit more than at will is they're able to have a maximum of a three-year contract. So it doesn't really quite pertain here whatsoever.
So, Mr. Kite, you're saying if the at-will comes... The will comes before the three-year contract is up. That's why there are some kind of negotiated settlements for ending that contract.
Senator Olson, members of the committee, you're right. It's and I deal with these situations on occasion where we negotiate some separation, unfortunately, for all sides.
Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we have a robust performance evaluation system, how necessary is legislation like this?
Senator Olson, Senator Daley, and members of the committee, I personally think you still need to have a system like this. We should have a more robust evaluation system. But no matter how robust and how well prepared people are to supervise people and how well the system works, there's going to be some subjectivity in it. And we need to be careful that people who are working in an occupation that's highly visible and sometimes highly criticized have some appropriate protections. Now, I could argue that maybe a whole other subject is maybe this is overprotective. On the other hand, I've served for a long time as a principal and a superintendent. I also served when I was a very young person doing that. And, I think it's probably pretty lucky that and appropriate that there were some people that had some protection and were sheltered from some of my mistakes that I would have made. I also know that as a superintendent, I can't tell you how many times people have come to me and said, fire the bum because they're not winning enough hockey games, or, that kind of stuff, or they're too conservative on right to life, or they're too liberal on right to life, or what, you go down any one of those avenues, and people are pretty quick to try to come after public educators. So I think that there is a need to have a certain wrap of protection around these folks. At the same time, there needs to, maybe this goes beyond this bill, there also needs to be a way and a willingness to have those very few people who aren't performing be removed from the system.
Any further discussion?
No. Madam Chair, is the intent to move the bill out now?
I think that was his announced pleasure.
Yes.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not sure what the response will be, but I would move to delete everything except sections 2 and 4. And, Madam Chair, I don't think the case is made for having an additional 3 years. I think Senator Daley asked the question why we should have an expectation of robust evaluations that are being done. And we can direct that, but when I look at what's, you know, cities of the first class, they do have this. I know when you re-enter, this has not been asked by districts that I represent to change this. Where, you know, the case has not been made.
Madam Chair, I would oppose that motion.
And then I would ask for a roll call.
Is there any further discussion? Senator Wolf?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wieger, just in response to the question you just asked, I can give you a personal example where a three-year would have been helpful to me as a teacher. I taught in a school district for 10 years, and then I left that school district, and upon going to another school district, you only have a one-year probationary period, and if you get hired a second year, you're tenured, and for 3 years in a row, I jumped from school district to school district and did not get that second year and was replaced with a first-year teacher, because if I'd have been hired that second year, I would have been tenured, and they would have had to, it would have changed the ability for them to have let me go if they would have needed to.
So, Senator Wolf, you're saying that provision actually can be a protection rather than a detriment. Okay. Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Roll call has been requested on the motion of Senator Wieger to delete all but sections 2 and 4. Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
No.
Senator Bonoff?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Hahn? Senator Harrington?
No.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Nino?
No.
Senator Sieben? Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
No.
There being 2 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. So the amendment is not adopted.
I would renew my motion that Senate File 768 pass and be sent to the floor. As amended.
Okay, is there, it's been moved to the pass and sent to the floor for Senate File 768. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. No. The motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, for your attention and time.
Senator Harrington.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would move the Senate File 781. And then I would also like to offer an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that I'd like. So there's an A1 amendment floating around someplace.
Being distributed here? Mm-hmm. Going down to the author quickly. Or maybe he has it. So would you, as that is being distributed, this is not a delete-all amendment. Would you like to just begin describing the amendment?
Certainly. Madam Chair, this is a much more modest amendment than Senator Thompson's attempt. I think I have one small section, in fact, of what Senator Thompson had. My amendment has really two parts to it. One, it seeks to clarify the definition of demotion. to, once again, as this was discussed, to mean a reduction in salary. We've already discussed kind of the legal history of why we would want that to happen. Court cases that were involving school districts asked to have some clarification of that language, and we seek to make sure that that language is, in fact, clarified. This change would make that clarification. The second part of this strikes the four-month notice of discharge for tenured teachers. In my conversations with local school district members and teachers, the conversation has kind of run this way. Teachers don't want bad teachers. More than almost anybody else doesn't want bad teachers, teachers don't want bad teachers among their ranks. What they have said to me is that they are very concerned about law that in some cases allows bad teachers to stay in the ranks longer and also cost their districts additional funding while those teachers are being paid. They do want due process. This does not eliminate due process. We believe that there should be a process, and most school districts are, in fact, following that process of an assessment period, performance improvement period, some monitoring of that improvement to make sure that we are continuing moving forward towards the goal of good pedagogy and good teaching, and then a decision point that would allow the district to make a decision. Has this teacher now achieved the goals that we all want, and are they teaching our kids? Are we getting the quality of teaching that we want? Or is this teacher not doing that, and have they been unable to meet the conditions of the job? In which case, it is appropriate for the school district to then move towards termination of that teacher and their services.
Okay, Senator Harrington, the A1 amendment that you are offering is essentially the provision, the same wording of the provision that we have discussed in the previous bill.
Is correct.
Senator Harrington moves the A1 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So now you were also describing the bill as well as the amendment, weren't you?
That is correct.
That the second provision. Are there any questions of the author or discussion? Or Ms. Gilbert, do you want to elaborate on his presentation?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools. I think that Senator Harrington did an excellent job at describing what's in the bill. And so unless you have any questions, I don't need to provide any more information.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little confused about the amendment and the position in the actual bill. Senator Harrington, you are changing the definition of the motion in your amendment. It says the word demote means to reduce the compensation of a person. Now, the word demotion, according to our dictionary, is just not a reduction of compensation. Demotion means something else. Demotion, according to the dictionary, is a reduction in an employee's rank or job title within the organizational hierarchy of a company. This legislation, so this bill actually deletes that. So it doesn't take into account really the definition of the motion. And you're in policy, so now we're redefining the motion to mean only compensation. I don't think we should do that. The motion has a very strict meaning in our language. And the way we had it is the correct interpretation. The way we had demote means reducing rank or to transfer to a lower branch in service. And so we are moving policy that is contrary to a meaning of a word.
Senator Torres-Ray, I think you had not arrived when we had this discussion earlier.
Sorry.
But I think this did grow out of a situation in St. Paul. And this provision was in the bill that we just acted on.
Sorry.
You're making a point in terms of the meaning of the word, but perhaps Ms. Gilbert could just describe the situation that you were trying to accommodate or correct for Senator Torres-Ray's benefit. And others that might not have been there at the moment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray. This did arise out of an appeals court ruling that had MSBA and the district also file a brief in the case about school districts should have general control over making principal assignments in their schools. And what happened here is that we were closing schools, and so we had more principals than we had positions. And so under a strict interpretation of what a demotion is, if a senior high principal, for example, wanted to take an elementary position where they didn't have any experience, without this clarification, that would have been allowed. And the superintendent made a decision that that it would better that the principal had skills, quite a bit of skills at the secondary level, and shouldn't be taking over an elementary principal position or any scenario like that. And so what the appeals court said was, we do have some obsolete language in here that's left over from when we were still part of civil service. The St. Paul School District was originally part of the city, and we were under the civil service law. And so the lower branch of service, there really isn't a lower branch of service within a school district. So some of the language we're striking in this provision is actually obsolete language. And so what the court said in its ruling is that it was sympathetic to superintendents having the flexibility to assign principals, but that it would behoove the legislature to just clarify what, in fact, a demotion is in the statute. So this is just for the purposes of this statute, that's what a demotion is.
So, Ms. Gilbert, you said that, for instance, this person was moved to a curriculum position but did not lose any salary.
Correct.
So it was, if the compensation was not reduced,
right.
That and you believe that that is consistent with addressing the judge's decision?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this would continue to allow districts some flexibility to assign principals, and it also would provide, a clear definition about what is a demotion. So in the instance where we have an excess principal, because we didn't give them another principal's assignment, because another principal's assignment didn't actually exist in the school, as long as we didn't reduce their salary, it would not be considered a demotion.
And Ms. Gilbert, I'm assuming, too, since the principal is not named in here, a teacher is named, that in our statute, principal is included in the definition of a teacher.
Correct, Madam Chair.
Speaking of definitions, having
yes.
meanings other than maybe perhaps in common vernacular usage. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the clarification. I'm sorry I missed the beginning of this. Ms. Gilbert, are you saying that this is only for the purpose of this particular provision, so that when you do want to demote for other circumstances, the provisions are clear so that you can do that?
Madam Chair, that's correct. And this provision doesn't even occur in the Statewide Tenure Act, so that's why it wasn't an issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Senator Rieger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Support the provision. But the reference to cities of the first class is tenure, and others is not tenure, I believe. We're looking at trying to have some consistency. Is there a preference that we have language in city of first class for continuing contract instead of using word tenure? Or does that matter?
Again, Madam Chair, the original First Class City Tenure Act was created when the school separated from the city, and the teachers used to be under civil service.
Right.
And so that's what created this first set of acts. And it has, evolved somewhat over time. So that's why we don't have some of the continuing, for example, we don't have provisions related to continuing contract in our within it. It applies to just the first class cities.
No, Madam Chair, I was just saying, here's an opportunity to continue on that journey if you wanted some additional changes, but take some steps now, I suppose.
Madam Chair, these two are good for now.
Okay.
Senator DeGray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe you're the person to ask this question of why the two differences? Why cities of first class, one way, why, the other cities with tenure the other way? Why the difference?
Well, that's a long history. I'm not sure if I can answer that.
Is there a short version?
There's two sets of law. I mean, it was the size of the cities, but I think they formed in different ways and times. Who wants to tackle that?
Madam Chair and members, I had pulled together a bunch of tenure information from the legislative reference library, and I did not bring that with me to committee today. But
I think that's what I read, but I don't have it all in my head.
There is something that William Mitchell, the law school, summarized, and it's actually pretty helpful, and I could bring that to the next committee hearing. And but it did specify that cities of the first class did initiate the first continuing contractor tenure laws, and other school districts were governed more by Public Employees Relations Act, and then those school districts followed. And so they were done at separate times, and so each sort of stepped up in time.
You know, it is thinking back in history, since I've lived much of this time, the early schools throughout the state were placed on those sections that were given this, that are now the school trust lands, and there was often a little country school in every township, and there came a time. In fact, it was between my second and third grade that I was in one of those country schools, a two-room school in Hennepin County, when the bill was passed in the legislature that required every school to be part of a district that had a high school. And so there was a massive reorganization of schools that I think led then into more of the kinds of law that applied to the school districts that were other than the cities of the first class. They were organized, I think, because of their population wasn't as much as it is today, but I think they were organized in a different manner prior to that time.
Okay.
But I think it would be helpful to share that history. Thanks, Dr. McQuay. Senator Bono.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do support Senator Harrington's bill, but I just still want to go back for a moment to Senator Daley's question in the last bill about if this working or whatever. And I think it's worth mentioning that if we really had a strong teacher evaluation system, then much of this discussion around continuing contract and tenure would fall by the wayside, because what would be important would be the ongoing performance of teachers. And so I'm looking forward to the completion of that piece of legislation, so that I think the uncertainty that many teachers are feeling with regard to this whole area would be quelled, because there would be clear measures of what it means to be effective, what it means to be highly effective, all of that. And then we could get rid of this adversarial issue with regard to continuing contract.
Madam Chair, if I could respond. And I really do, I appreciate both your support and the commentary. And I also am very excited about the idea that we're going to have a stronger teacher evaluation system that we're going to develop here. Two points in terms of this bill. One, I believe taking the date out actually supports that, because it allows school districts to not have an artificial date when they have to start this. One of the concerns with this is that in order for a school district that starts at our traditional after Labor Day period to really meet this date, they almost have to identify the teacher within the first 2 weeks of school. And so it really puts an enormous onus on the principal to get in that classroom and decide within the first 2 weeks of school or 3 weeks of school that this teacher is not working out, and then we still work our way through February to try and make a decision. And that doesn't seem to really work with what the teachers have said to me, which is if the person really can't cut the mustard, we really should be moving more expeditiously. But we also need to give the principal of time to actually do the evaluation. And I don't know that the first 2 weeks of school, I know what it was like when my kids would go back to school. It was chaos in the schools with, you know, new classrooms and new buses and people moving around and teachers coming in that hadn't taught in the district before. And all of that falls to the principal, and we're now asking the principal on top of that to know that every teacher in the school is at point. That just doesn't seem very practical to me. So removing the date, I think, will actually facilitate better teacher evaluation as we move forward. So,
if there's no further discussion, I think Senator Harrington moves that Senate File 781 be recommended to pass.
I believe that that my friend Janet does wish to speak, though. So.
I tried.
I appreciate that, but keeping this friendly, I want to make sure everybody gets heard. So,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Elsweger, Education Minnesota, and I'm just the president of the St. Paul Federation of Teachers wasn't able to be here today, and she has a conflict, and they are opposed to this bill, and so I'm officially going on record for her to indicate that they do not think that this is necessary for the teachers in the unit. Thank you.
Thank you, and I would ask to move the bill to the general register.
General orders calendar. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The bill is passed and sent to the floor. We have one more bill. Senator Nelson.
The new sticker every time she testifies to a different. Do we get a new sticker?
Maybe she should just
general orders. I don't, you know, ready to go. We got the two of them. I'll sit up here.
William, for a question, maybe.
Let's go for the first one. Oh, this one?
This is the
one. I don't know. I don't think that's School Principals Association. So,
Senator Nelson.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for hearing Senate File 1022, Principal Evaluation. I'd like to move Senate File 1022.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Nelson has moved Senate File 1022, and you have
A2.
And Madam Chair, I have the A2 amendment to get the shape in the bill that I would like, and I believe the committee members have that. And actually, the A2 amendment changes a few of the dates, the effective dates, and clarifies some of the language. With that, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about the bill. It is a principal evaluation bill.
Let's adopt your author's
thank
amendment.
Thank you.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is a principal evaluation bill, and effort of full disclosure, I need to tell you that I am a PK. I am a principal's kid, and I know the importance that they play in our school district. I believe that probably all of us in this room would say that education is really the moral issue of our day. It's the civil rights issue of our day. And as Senator Torres-Ray and I have often spoken about on the Jobs Committee and Senator DeKreif, it truly is the economic issue of our day. And we've had a lot of discussions in this committee as far as, how can we close that achievement gap, or as I like to call it, the opportunity gap. And we've had great discussions about how can we ensure that all of our kids graduate from high school and are not only graduate but then are prepared to succeed in secondary education, whatever that might be for them, post-secondary education, and full employment. And we've had great discussions about the importance of teacher effectiveness, and we kind of alluded to that today. And we know that teachers are the one most in-school determinant in determining student achievement. But I think there might be one aspect that we're missing, and that's what my bill hopes to address today. We really need to be talking about our principals, the leaders in our school, and I believe that it's really the principals and the leaders that can be the most effective in not only training our teachers but retaining good teachers as well. And so that's what this bill is about. It's about evaluation, and we know that evaluation of our principals is critical as far as educational leadership. And the interesting thing is currently state law makes no provision for evaluating tenured principals, none. Probationary teachers and principals, however, are evaluated 3 times a year. But once there's this tenure, there's absolutely no evaluation of our principals. And I believe that the practice of evaluation through Minnesota is varied. We have some school districts that do a great job of evaluating principals, and we have some districts that don't do it at all. And the goal of this bill is then to link strong principal evaluation to improving teaching, and then, of course, the end result, student performance, enhanced student performance. And I'll just kind of give you a general overview of the bill, and then I have some testifiers that can add more detail. The bill actually does three things. For the first time, it will require that every principal and assistant principal in the district be evaluated annually. And then secondly, the bill establishes some minimum requirements for that evaluation process. And then, just as a sidebar, it allows flexibility for districts to do this in the way that they think is best for them. And then lastly, Section 3 sets up a study group to include department, state associations, and other interest groups to develop an additional model for the evaluation of principals. We do have one model today, but we also will have a study group to develop other models as well. And with that, Madam Chair, I would like to introduce my testifiers. I have Roger Arneson from the School Principals Association.
Madam Chair, members, Roger Arneson, I represent the Elementary and Secondary School Principals Associations. Just to give you a bit of background, this is an excellent bill, and it is supported by the Elementary and Secondary Principals Associations. We have both of the executive directors here. They're going to visit with you in a moment. Principal evaluation and teacher evaluation got its first major look a little bit over a year ago when we talked about applications for the Race to the Top grants. When those grants were initially discussed in Minnesota, one of the questions was evaluation. How often and what would the evaluation look like? That started a conversation in the professional ranks of the school principals that we needed to have a model that would work for school districts, that would meet the goals that Senator Nelson has outlined here, and actually have some sort of inclusion as well, that there's a state mandate that districts have evaluations of their principals and assistant principals throughout the state. We're very pleased with this bill and support it wholeheartedly, and I'm going to turn the program over here to Mr. Storti and Ms. Knuth to go through the evaluation process that they provided you, I think, with a copy of already, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Mr. Storti?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for this opportunity to tell you a little bit about the principal evaluation process that we have developed.
Give your name and position for the
I'm sorry. My name is Fred Storti, Executive Director of the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association. And I'd like to my colleague to introduce yourself, because we actually have a little agenda inside your principal evaluation booklet. If you would take a look at that, and we'd kind of like to walk through the agenda, and my colleague Ms. Knuth is first on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Storti.
I'm sharing a mic. Be sure that you're positioning so that the system picks it up. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm Joanne Knuth, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. We are grateful for this opportunity to share our Minnesota Principals Evaluation Model with you. We have the agenda, and I have my artifact here as a teacher to demonstrate that to you, and the actual booklet model. We want to go through this agenda quickly to give you the overview of what this process is about. A bit of background. As Mr. Arneson said, we began these conversations last year, particularly formalizing them in June, when the three associations, the superintendents, secondary, and elementary, came together with a representative group of three principals from each of the associations, demographically representing the state, Greater Minnesota, suburban, and urban principals, in addition to representing the diversity of principals, gender and ethnic. In addition, we partnered with a board of school administrators. Stan Mack, the executive director, was very much a part of this process, along with the chair of BOSA, Mary Mackby, the principal of Central High School in St. Paul. Brought them together over the course of several months, beginning in August and terminating February 1st. A 6.5 days of really intensive conversation facilitated by Greg Vandell. And we began by doing a bit of homework. Well, this was really a talented group of people, all committed to providing the best model, the best evaluation process, beginning with this this assumption that an evaluation process at its heart, at its best heart, is a professional development process. So that is very much the way we designed this evaluation model. There is, as you we walk you through it, there is an alternative route to go if necessary, if the principal isn't performing. But it's a professional development process, and critically important to do it annually. So with that bit of a background, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Storti, who will talk to you about the research and the homework we did before we begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, so we set out on this journey by doing a research review using Educational Research Service and Phi Delta Kappa, and got a ton of research on principal evaluation systems. And from that information, we were looking for some really good recent models that have been done. And we actually found three that resonated with us. And the ones that we used a lot in our work was the Illinois Principals model, which was just developed in 2010, this past year. We also used the Iowa model, which was developed about 2 years ago, and the North Carolina model, which was developed about also 2 years ago. And we found a lot of similarities in those things that we wanted to bring forward with our work. Our first big decision was to talk about what should be the framework for a principal evaluation program. Should it be the ISLIC standards? Should it be the National Association of Elementary School Principal Standards? Should it be the competencies, the Minnesota competencies that we have in statute? And that to us was really a no-brainer, that it should be the competencies. And I'm going to turn back to Ms. Knuth here to talk a little bit about item number three and the competencies.
And thank you, Mr. Storti. Before I do that, I do want to call your attention to the last page 25. I neglected to do that, and that lists the individuals who were involved in this development process. It also lists the references that Mr. Storti just referred to regarding research. So the framework is the principal competencies in administrative rule. Every principal in in earning a license must meet 17 competencies, individual competencies. These are in administrative rule and statute. And within those 17 competencies, 96 individual components. And to demonstrate to you what they are, I invite you to turn to page 11. These are the competencies principals meet and demonstrate through their preparation programs in their graduate schools. It would be very hard to implement an evaluation process looking at 95 competencies in 17 areas. So we spent a good deal of focused conversation around making a more usable and understandable framework, a more focused framework, if you have it. So what we did after a deep examination discussion of these competencies and all three associations involved, again, the superintendents, secondary and elementary principals, we divided these into seven core competency areas, and those are on page 6. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Storti to talk to you about these seven key leadership administrative competencies.
Mr. Storti.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as Ms. Knuth said, there's 95 components in the competencies, and we really wanted to make that a more workable rubric, so to speak. And so we came up with these seven, looking at some of the other states and doing what made sense. And as you can see there on page 6, those are what we call the core competencies in each one. And I'm not going to read them all to you, all the definitions here, obviously, but strategic leadership, which is so crucial to the conditions that principals set in a school to create a vision, mission, and goals for the school aligned with the school district goals. Secondly, instructional leadership. We want all principals to be instructional leaders. And that's been a big change in the principalship in the past 10 years or so. Principals used to be managers. We need principals to be instructional leaders today. That doesn't mean that management isn't important. If you go on to the managerial leadership area, the next one, number three, it's key that schools be well-run and well-organized with safety and so on. So management is managerial is important. Cultural leadership, the fourth one, and understanding the people in a school, how it came to its current state, and possibly needing to change the culture, is a key role of the principal. Five, communication leadership. The principal has many different publics to communicate with internally and externally. Six is school community leadership and the ability for a principal to create opportunities with their parents, with community members, with business representatives to be part of a community school. And then finally, the ethical and professional competency is really something that principals need to model in the school as a building a leader. So those are the core competencies. And now if I could just take you back to page two, there's something that we call operating principles, and these are the PLES principles here, and there's nine of them. And as we went into this, as we engage with our superintendents, our supervisors, and our principals, we wanted to have some really clear principles of how this should work. And first of all, if we were to take a look at number three, connecting the academic, social, emotional, developmental growth of all students in a learning community, we really feel it's imperative that student growth is measured over time using multiple indicators of growth, including standardized test data. It could be formative and summative data and other means as part of the accountability process. Also under number five there, having research-based criteria, again, the use of formative and summative assessment data is really, really important. And offering the pathways, number seven, for a role transition is important, and we do have very high-performing members of our profession, and we have members that need assistance and may need to move on as well. So we've addressed that in the document here with the two tracks of continuous growth and a remediation track.
Ms. Caruth?
Madam Chair, I invite you to go to page five. So how does the process work? We'll see a flow chart on page five. It begins with the superintendent meeting with the principal late summer, and the principal bringing to that conversation the goals that he as a student, as the school leader, instructional leader, is setting for himself and his staff. They meet, they confer about these goals. It's essentially a professional development plan. The superintendent agrees that that is something that the principal should work on, multiple parts of the goals. This is, by the way, three-year, we look at it as a three-year flexible review process with seven areas of leadership. It's very difficult to perhaps go into depth in evaluating every dimension of those seven areas of leadership every year. But the process allows for focusing. For instance, in a given year, it might be focusing on instructional leadership. We need to raise our math scores. What are we going to do to raise math scores, Ms. Principal or Mr. Principal? And what do you plan to implement? What initiatives are you going to undertake? And very importantly, upfront, what are going to be your measures that you've achieved your goals at the end of the year? Those are pieces of that professional development plan the principal and superintendent discuss. We go through the year, and hopefully there would be, in an ideal world, continuing intermittent conversations between the superintendent and the principal. But at the end of the year is the culminating conversation, the evaluation conversation. And at that conversation, the principal brings the professional development plan, the goals, the measures to see if results were achieved, and the evidence, and I invite you to turn to page 14. page 14, we have each of the dimensions of leadership detailed, and under each of those dimensions are lists of evidence, artifacts, data that principals can bring to that culminating conversation, evaluation. So just looking at strategic leadership, obviously very important would be the school improvement plan, teacher surveys, student achievement data, and you can go down the list to see under each of these. In several places we have noted, of course it's very important to have student achievement data. How have those math scores gone up? What has been the increased student learning, and where is the evidence to show that, if that was the focus of this year's professional development plan and evaluation? So this is a very important piece of the evaluation process. We can't talk about, well, things are going pretty well this year, people are feeling good, you know, I think we had a good year. That may be what we could do in the past. It is no longer what we can do moving forward. We have to have focused efforts, and we have to have documentation that our goals have been achieved. So we finish that evaluation conference. Then we move to the documentation of the evaluation conference, and I'll turn it, Madam Chair, over to my colleague.
Mrs. Storti, would you please do move that mic so that you...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, before we go to that, if I could just, there's one piece I kind of forgot to address, and that's on page 7. If I could ask you to turn over to page 7. We did develop a rubric for the evaluation process here. And as you can see, there's 5 different areas. Unsatisfactory, does not meet acceptable standards. Our second one is developing, does not meet standards for performance, but demonstrates adequate growth. And we would expect that a new principal would be developing in many ways and is not going to come in at the distinguished and the accomplished other levels. But we wanted to be clear about a rubric that it will be used against all 7 of those strategic, those leadership areas that we talked about earlier. And
but
now
Mr.
if I could
Storti,
bring
you... Before you leave that, I was reminded when the term rubric started to become a common a term used in educational vocabulary and vernacular, I looked it up in one of the old dictionaries, and it was a kind of a structure or headings that were usually used in religious documents and normally in red. And so when I opened this, and I presume this is close to a religious document based on all that you put into it, and you've got the headings in red.
Oh,
so,
Madam Chair, if I may say, that was entirely by design.
And Madam Chair, it definitely has been a religious experience developing this, let me tell you. Now, if I could take you back then to the summary documents, and then we would love to have your questions about this process. Back on, let's see, back on pages,
19.
Where are we on page?
19.
Okay, I'm back on page 19, thank you. So on page 19 and 20, you're going to find the evaluation summary document, and this would be completed at each year by the superintendent, the superintendent's designee that supervises the principals using all the components that we just talked about. Then there is the professional growth plan that Ms. Knuth talked about in the development of this process, that it's a continuous process. So after that summary document for next year, the principal is going to go back and look at ways on, you know, how they can improve their performance around those different different framework. And this particular one on page 21 is the continuous improvement growth plan. This is all focused on growth. The last form on page 22 and 23 is actually the remediation plan. And obviously this is for someone that is struggling, that needs some assistance, and this is where a superintendent or his or her designee would really take the lead on helping to identify and engaging the principal in that remediation process. So it's a performance-based system. We really built in a lot of evidence into those different areas. And this is really all about enhancing instructional leadership skills and principles so they can help teachers and that students can achieve. You know, we know that great schools, you know, don't happen without great teachers. You need to have great teachers. They're the number one people instructing kids. But great teachers don't stick around, and schools aren't great if you don't have great principals. And we really see this as a continuous progress improvement process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sturdy.
Madam Chair, if I may add an additional observation. This process for our associations, for the task force members, and I think I can say for our membership, they have been hearing about it at division meetings, presented at each of the three conferences that our associations held this winter. It's a very empowering process. And there is a great deal of ownership in the process because the principals developed the process for their evaluation. They embrace accountability. And I will say, having been a teacher, a principal, an area superintendent in St. Paul Public Schools, that evaluation is necessary, and evaluation is welcomed and embraced and does contribute to professional growth. But I did want to make the point that moving ahead, choosing to do this, really was an empowering, positive process for our associations.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the work that you put into this, and I think it is entirely appropriate that we be moving on a principal evaluation system along with teacher evaluation. Now, that's kind of gotten the attention, and it looks like it's selective and not meant to be the collaborative the effort to help them improve and strengthen their very important role. So I think that you've developed a very good model, which I see is reflected in the language of the bill, and you really have the model essentially ready to implement, it would appear. And I hope that that can be mirrored in some of the efforts that we are a part of an evaluation model for teachers as well. Senator Bonnell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that was really what I was going to say as well. What I appreciate about this is that it did come from you and your group, because I think then, you know, when it comes from the bottom up, it really will have the buy-in, and it will be something that you all have respect for and appreciate, and will make it that much more impactful. And then, so two other things to that. So does the bill in its current form align completely with what you've done?
It appears to. I should let them answer that.
Well, actually, since receiving Senator Nelson's bill, we did do kind of a comparison of bill and principal model. There's a great deal of alignment.
Okay.
I think to the point that actual verbiage, rhetoric, words, because these are the words that are part of an evaluation process, are reflected in our principal's evaluation model. So I would say that, yes,
good.
The model aligns with the intent of this bill.
I can add something to that, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson?
And also in this language are things that I think are important to us as legislators, things that we've talked about in our committee. Things like teacher evaluation, and Senator Olson mentioned that, but that's really kind of what was the genesis of this legislation for me. We talked so much about teacher evaluation, and we know that teachers are the most important element in schools, and we're talking about compensating our teachers based upon their effectiveness, and yet I've had a number of my teaching colleagues say, but how are they going to evaluate us? Our principals haven't had any instruction in evaluation. And in fact, some were worried that school board members would evaluate them, and what experience do they have? And so I think a key aspect of this is exactly in the amendment that we adopted, line 1.13, and that's a key point, is that our administrators are trained and evaluated on their ability to evaluate teachers. And so the time is really now. In fact, as I mentioned, we should probably have this in place first. because that is a key aspect. The other things that we've talked about in this committee that I know are important to all of us, and as Ms. Knuth mentioned, was another piece of the principal evaluation is academic growth. We are interested in results, and we're interested in seeing achievement in students, and again, that's part of it. Teachers mentioned to me that the importance of having their voice heard as well in evaluating principals. So you'll see that we have surveys there and on-the-job evaluations. So I think it's a very comprehensive bill. You can tell there's been a lot of work that's done on it. I think it's time that we get this in place so we can continue on with our other good things for education. And I just want to thank you for your time. If there's any other questions.
I was still in the middle. So I haven't given up my thank you, Madam Chair. So a couple things. One is there is no percentage linked to growth. And so I'm not asking for that. I think it makes sense that it's looser. I think the emphasis on multiple measures makes sense. And so I would suggest that perhaps as we look at teacher evaluations, it's a good model, and we might be better served to go in that direction than a rigid approach, because you know there's a reason that you didn't choose to have it be 50% related to growth. Yet if we do adopt a 50% on the teachers, then I think we ought to hold principals accountable in the same way. So I think there ought to be consistency, and I don't know where we'll land on that, but I think both ought to be consistent. I guess that would be it.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Elson, or maybe Mr. Aronson, if he's still here, might be appropriate. I'm not sure. I'm just looking at the language of the amendment that we adopted, the A2 amendment, and it's referring to this model for administrators that is relying on and includes things that are under sections of law 122A.414 and 122A.60 and 122A.6A6.61, I believe we've repealed or are in the process of repealing A60 and A61. And if those laws were to pass that do repeal that, does that do harm to this structure that you're contemplating? Do we need to adopt that as a separate part of this bill since we're repealing it in another bill? I'm just asking the question. If it's moot and it doesn't matter if it goes away and it doesn't do any harm to what you contemplate, then fine. But I think we do have provisions in other bills that repealing that staff development mandate, and that's what this refers to.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, perhaps it would be better off if you just said that uses the district's professional development resources and plans. I think part of our action there is the notion of setting expectations and the belief that our school system, our school districts, are not going to neglect professional development. It's critical, rather than having to direct every detail of it in the, you know, as to what constitutes a professional development plan or what constituted it at the time we wrote that language. I think there's other things there. So perhaps just taking those sections out would not do damage to the the bill.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I guess that would be my suggestion.
But of course, we haven't made the changes in law yet either.
I understand we haven't made the changes in law, but we are contemplating making those changes in law. And if that does happen, then this would then be referring to something that didn't exist. But I like your suggestion, and maybe if the author would think it a friendly amendment, I would suggest that line 1.16 after the word plans, put a period, strike the rest of that line, and then strike the language on line 1.17 up through the first period, so that it would just delete those specific references, and it would just read that the must use the district professional development resources and plans, period.
Senator Hand, I would just take one period out. delete the
oh, I guess,
the,
yes, I don't mean, I guess we
comma,
don't need
from
yet.
The comma on up to the period, and then you would have it.
But that would be I'd offer that as an oral amendment, assuming that's a friendly amendment.
Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, I accept that as a friendly amendment. We're not sure what's going to happen. Certainly, school districts can proceed with staff development regardless whether we have these sections in law or not. So I would accept this as a friendly amendment.
Thank you.
So Senator Hahn moves the amendment on lines 1.6 after plans, delete the comma and the rest of that line, or the and the rest, or actually the rest of the sentence up to the period on line 1.7. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion? Senator Wigger.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And, thank you to everybody for the efforts. And I think it was important, too, that you acknowledge that many districts are doing this. And I know for sure Patty Phillips, the superintendent in 622, has the highest of expectations on behalf of the school board and the public for each superintendent to develop a plan. And so while we put this hopefully in statute, it's not new. And it's maybe a way to say what we want as a state. But what I'm thinking, we want this requirement, the expectation for teachers and for the principals. Why wouldn't we then state this for superintendents if that's the direction? Because we're saying precisely this is what we expect from St. Paul in the committee room for students. These are the consequences, and we're telling teachers the pay, and then principals. But it's the superintendent that does that, and I think, Senator Nelson, you have a response. But to me, that's the logical extension, because the superintendent really runs the show after the hire from the school board.
Madam Chair,
Senator Nelson.
I can answer that. I thought the same thing. I thought, let's just include the superintendents right in here. I do think that's a question for another day. It could very well be a different type of evaluative process. I know one of my districts, the Rochester District, is kind of going through that right now. So I do think that's a great question, and I think that is a topic we should take up another day.
Okay.
Senator Nelson? Is there further discussion? Or?
Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that Senate File 1022 be referred to.
Recommended to pass.
Recommended to pass. That's
as
what I'm
amended.
Looking for. As amended. Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, Madam Chair, is if you want to, if you want it to go directly to the floor or in an omnibus bill.
Madam Chair, we could, but it doesn't mean that we might not include it in an omnibus bill. We'll see what goes forward.
All right, thank you.
Which would you prefer? Would you like to have it go to the floor?
I think I'd like to have it go to the floor. It's a great bill. It's some discussion that I think is needed in our narrative as we look at school performance and teacher evaluation. So I would like to have it go to the floor if possible.
So, Madam Chair, we're not sure. Not everything that makes it to general orders necessarily is brought up on the floor, but it would give that option. And we seem to be in that pattern today. So if there's no objection, Senator Wigger.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think it's excellent, you know, and it's a mandate. I also was wondering in terms of the fiscal impact locally, elementary and secondary principals feel this is all doable within existing resources.
Ms. Knuth?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, we believe this is doable within existing resources.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have to tell you that our members have known that we've been working on this, and I had principals from a number of districts, many metropolitan districts, calling to say, when is this going to be done? We want to use this thing. Our district is looking at a new principal evaluation process. So I think you'd find that our members really do embrace the process.
Well, Mr. Storti, I'd hope you replied to them. There is nothing that's stopping them from doing that.
Right.
We shouldn't have to tell them, but if it takes an extra nudge, we'll be happy to do that. There's no further discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is passed and will be sent to the
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much to all of you, to members, and we will be meeting. This is Thursday, isn't it? Our next meeting will be after the break on Tuesday.
Pretty much. From 77 on, we weren't doing it. And everybody in the department.
This is about the
Well, that's kind of the conversation. What do you mean? Nobody ever evaluates that.
Yeah.
I got